I'm Liza.
I'm Riz.
And this is the Little Sleep.
Much Reading Podcast.
And finally, from so little sleeping and so much reading, his brain dried up and he went completely out of his mind.
Resisting the urge to sing the song.
Me thinking the same exact thing.
I like to look at your little trinkets behind you every week.
I've got lots of things.
I've got lots of trinkets.
Have you seen this side before?
No. Well, I have because I was in your house.
Yeah.
But you usually don't have this part on the camera.
I need to, put all my books on the shelf.
I spy the Inkheart trilogy, I think. And the Court of Thorns and Roses, second and third book.
Yep.
And at least two shelves, perhaps, of Stephen King.
Yeah, he starts up there and he ends down there.
Oh my God. You're like a Barnes and Noble.
Yeah, I bought someone's collection.
Does it have every book?
No.
He writes too many books, I fear.
But it has a lot, and it has a lot of hardcovers, so that's nice. And I only paid like $30 for their entire collection.
That's pretty good.
Same thing with their Agatha Christie books.
That's pretty good. What are we celebrating today?
Today, we are celebrating Asian American Heritage Month.
Yay!
Party, party, party.
Oftentimes, the Observance Month episodes end up being my favorite, some of my favorite episodes. Like, we've had some really good ones over the years. What did I read last year? I don't think we made it to Native to I mean Asian American Heritage Month last year because
No. Oh, that was loud. No, I think we ended in May. Yeah.
We did. We
Yeah.
Our last episode, I feel like, came out May 1st, and it was the Court of Thorns and Roses episode. But the year before that, I read How Much of These Hills is Gold, which was a really cool book. I remember yours being really cool too.
I don't remember what mine was.
It had it was white, and it had a line drawing of a bob haircut on the cover. Ringing any bells? Let me see, because.
No, what was it?
LSMR podcast. LSMR podcast. Hello? We've read too many books.
Yeah, we have.
Too many books. Let's see.
Chapel Roan is coming to Buffalo.
You have to go see her.
I can't. She sold out.
No.
They upgraded her venue and she sold out in 5 minutes.
She's too popular.
Yeah.
Yes. You read On Such a Full Sea by Chong Rai Lee.
Oh, yeah. I DNF'd that book.
You did? I forgot about that.
He was too smart for me.
Yeah, I forgot about that. And I read How Much of These Hills is Gold by C. Pam Zhang. And I gave it eights and nines across the board. We had a very two opposite ends of the spectrum on that episode. I forgot about that. How fun. Okay, this episode, we didn't DNF because we're still going to finish the books. Well, I'm going to finish mine.
Yeah, I'm going to finish mine.
But we had a tough week. So the girls did not finish their books, but we still have a lot to talk about.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. My brain has just been it's almost like I feel like it's taking me so long to read anything. I
Yeah.
would be like, oh, I just read 10 pages. I'll look down and it's been like 2 pages. And I'm
No,
like,
literally.
what is that? Why?
I don't know. I don't know what it is. And I was like, it's almost having like, I guess people call it like a reading slump, is almost like writer's block. But I feel like a reading slump entails that you're like trying to read books and you're just not finding a good one.
Yes.
Whereas like a reading block feels like you're reading a good book, but you just can't focus enough to sit down and read it. And that
Yeah.
was my problem this week. Because my brain was just fried from other, from school stuff that I was like, every night when it would have been like reading time, I was like, I like, yeah, like I would look at the page and be like, I think I've been staring at one page for 30 seconds, like long. But it is what it is.
We're doing our goddamn best.
We are goddamn best. And next week, we're reading the YA books.
Which one did I pick for that? I can't remember.
I thought you were going to do Divergent.
Oh, Slay.
Anyway, so that should go by fast because they're YA. I also feel like we have one. Hold on, let me grab my list.
I didn't say I don't have my agenda on me.
We're not doing that next week. Well, we can, but we had short stories scheduled first. Which would you rather do?
I don't care.
I'm down for either.
Maybe the YA one would be easier for us.
Yeah, let's do YA next week, short stories the week after that. And then we just need to think of one more. And then it's Pride Month reads.
See it.
And then it's my favorite thing is monsters. We're excited about that.
So excited.
Anywho, what did you read this week?
I read Severance by Ling Ma.
And I read Disorientation by Elaine Shi Chow. And they're both hot pink covers. I'll show you. Pinky. We love pink covers.
Not a kiss.
So what was your book? I feel like your book is like one, because I don't know about you, but we have that on our fiction favorites table at work. Like it's a very, I feel like, renowned book, I suppose. So my question, I guess, was going to be like, was it, is it what you expected or is it different?
It's a little bit different because it is, it's like, I think we talked about this last week. It's like a literary fiction apocalypse book.
Yeah.
And again, I haven't finished it, but so far it's very much set in the non-apocalypse
Oh,
because
okay.
it has like two, it has like a front story and a backstory, one being like before the apocalypse and her life living in New York City, and in a way kind of like being a Chinese American in New York City, and then like the apocalypse part, which
Okay.
reminds me kind of a lot of it reminds me of And Then I Woke Up.
Oh, interesting. Huh. Do you wish it was more apocalypse and less of the backstory, or is it like a cool balance?
I wish that it was more apocalypse a little bit,
Yeah.
but at the same time, I don't know how to exactly explain this. But do you know how there's that like wave of books that's happening that feel like Gen Z millennial writing specifically.
Yes.
That's how this feels a lot, like the way that she's like talking and describing things. It's like I want to compare it to my year of rest and relaxation, but I didn't read that. You know
Right.
what I mean?
No, but I think I know. Wait, can you like read a tiny section?
Yeah, let me see.
Because I think I know what you mean. Like, it's almost like the when you say that, what I think of is like this sort of like almost melancholic, like almost like sarcastic tone of a narrator. They're like, well, this is this, so da da da. Like it's hard to articulate.
So there's this part. This is like when she, this is early on, this is chapter three, and she's talking about being in New York. And I'm gonna read, but I'm kind of gonna jump around to different spots.
Bye.
Okay. I arrived to the city carried by the tides of others. Most of my college friends were moving there if they hadn't already. It seemed like the inevitable default place to go. Arriving, we did exactly what we thought we wanted to do. Jobless, we sat outside at sidewalk cafes, donning designer shades, splitting $25 pitchers of spiked Meyer lemonade, and holding tipsy, circulating conversations that lasted well into evening as rush hour waxed and waned around us. Other people had places to go, but not us. It was the summer of 2006, and the move itself seemed like a slight, inconsequential event in the grand sequence of things, which was my mother died, I graduated college, I moved to New York City. Then I'm going to jump to. Year. I was tying this guy's tie one morning. He wanted a Windsor knot. I tried to follow the step-by-step instructions he gave, blundering on the fifth or sixth step every time. My wife usually does this, he said apologetically. Ex-wife, he corrected. After his divorce, he'd moved out from Westchester to Williamsburg, into one of those sleek, gray high-rises that overlooked the East River and boasted skyline views of Manhattan. What's the occasion? I asked for the special knot. I'm getting remarried, he said, and laughed when I looked up. Just kidding. No, I'm going to be on TV. Congratulations, I said, trying not to look too impressed. But don't they have their own wardrobe people to help you with this? It's local cable, he smiled patiently. I'll call you tonight. You know what I mean? You see what I'm
Yes, I know
saying?
exactly what you mean. Yes.
Is it like millennial? Like it feels, it's like Gen Z millennial.
Yes. It's dry in a good way. Like dry, like you exp like, yeah. It's very matter of fact. Whereas I feel like when you look at books perhaps written by like I feel like Gen X have a crazed tone to them when they're writing, they're saying something, they're going nuts with it. And then I feel like boomers were slash are almost like too flowery with their language.
Yeah, they're very lyrical.
And they'd be like they like it would be interesting to like give four generations the same example. Prompt and be like, you have to use this setting, describe this situation, go see what they do. Because I think you're right. Like, I think it is a very millennial Gen Z tone that you see like across books at this point.
Yeah, it's almost, it's like not clean
Yeah.
and very raw in a way that like a lot of other things are very polished, very like, I don't know, I feel like they wouldn't waste time with some of that. You know what I mean?
Yes, I know exactly what you mean.
And I don't have a problem with that kind of writing. It's also just not my favorite, weirdly enough.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I wish that there was more of that, but like in the apocalypse setting, I think that would have, and maybe it'll get to that. Maybe I'm just not
Right.
there yet.
Because are you like halfway through or not even?
Not even.
Yeah,
I'm
yeah.
almost halfway through.
Because, like, technically, I feel like it could happen any, like, the climax of the book could happen any minute.
I think I start to read books like with that kind of writing, and I think that there's not going to be a climax because of how dry it is.
Yes, and I totally get that because there is a trend amongst literary fiction written by millennials of you're like, actually, you finish the book, and even if you liked it, you're like, actually, nothing happened in this book. You're like, actually, like, I don't know what the plot was. So I get what you're saying. What causes the apocalypse again?
A flu.
Blue.
Right, which I was curious, and I should have looked this up before. When did this book come out?
Before 2020.
Because it's yeah, 2018, because it's a flu that comes from China.
No way.
Yeah.
So are people like being racist?
Not yet.
Not yet.
No, not yet. The company she works with factories in China.
Okay.
And so they're like, oh, we're just making you guys aware because blah blah blah. But what's interesting is the flu makes people into like zombie-like creatures almost, but they're like not like violent. They're just, I think that they're like decaying in some way. It seems like they're at least like out of it. Like if you walk into their house, they don't realize that you're there.
Oh,
And
weird.
they're like trying to do their everyday tasks. Like there's this one part where this girl is sipping orange juice, but it's been there forever. So it's like moldy orange juice. And she's like trying to read, but the book's upside down. You know what I
Oh,
mean?
weird.
Which that
Ew.
reminds me of, and then I woke up because as I'm reading this, I'm like, are these actually zombies? Like, are these actually sick people? I'd like to know.
Right. That's so interesting. Like it almost weird. Like it, I've actually never seen that before.
And it's the part that I'm at right now in the apocalypse part of the story. They're all out of New York City. So it makes me wonder, like, what was New York City like?
Right.
Because it doesn't seem to me like those people die unless like they are killed. So I'm like,
Yeah.
is New York City still just like congested with like people trying to drive cars and trying to like do their everyday thing that they
Yeah.
weird. So we'll see, I guess.
We'll see. I'm actually very, you'll have to text me when you finish it or next week to talk about it because I'm like actually really curious. And then, huh. Because that's a very different kind of apocalypse.
Yeah.
Because it's still very not good, like it's still really bad, but it doesn't have that same sense of like terror, I guess,
Right,
that we're used
it's
to.
quiet.
It's a quiet apocalypse, which I think, yeah, I don't really, I'm trying to think of examples, other examples of quiet apocalypse. And I can't really think of anything. I guess in did you watch Avengers like Infinity War? And how half of the po world population gets like zapped away? It's like kind of like that, but like not this, but like that's a quiet apocalypse. And then I guess in Planet of the Apes, isn't the sickness just kill humans, it doesn't like make them into zombies or
I
anything.
think so.
Yeah. Like at that point, it's almost like a, like it is almost just a pandemic story. But it must be impacting, like, is it like, is the infection like spreading rapidly in Severance?
Not yet.
Not yet.
Or it could be that it is, and I just don't know it yet. Sometimes I was wondering that.
That could be it too. What do you think the name means?
I don't know. At first, I thought it had something to do with the fact that, like, she moved to New York City from China when she was at a very young age.
Yeah.
And so, like, a lot of the like not apocalypse story is about like how disconnected she feels from that.
Oh,
And
okay.
like there's a point where she goes to China for work, and she like stopped learning Chinese, stopped speaking it at a very young age, so she's not very, she feels like her language is like frozen in time because it's very like childish. And this guy's like, oh, well, let me see if you can speak, and like speaks to her, and she replies to him, and he says, oh, your Chinese is actually really good. I think it was specifically Mandarin. He's like, your Mandarin's really good. And she's like, it's so funny how that's what they say to me in America. Like, your English is so good.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like there was something with that that I'm like, oh.
That's interesting.
And her
I will.
parents are dead.
Okay.
She doesn't have any other family in the States.
So she's been kind of like disconnected from her culture. Yeah, I guess I was just curious if like if people will end up being even more racist than they already are towards Asian people, Chinese people, like happened in real life when COVID hit. But also when I asked about severance, because like I wondered, because severance is like when you get laid off from your job but not fired. So they give you like money, like severance pay. Like I wondered if she's gonna like, if she hasn't already, like get like laid off from her job. And if that
Interesting.
has something to do with it, I don't know.
The other really interesting thing is her job is she works for a publishing company making like fancy Bibles.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
And so the printing factory's in China.
Right. So she's in contact with all of these different printing companies that are making the like fancy Bibles and whatever.
Bibles. That adds an interesting layer to it too.
Yeah, and there's already been a part where like in the apocalypse part they go on like scouting or scavenging missions or whatever, and where they go into people's house and just take whatever they can. And she goes in there and she's in a girl's room and she sees the Bible that she knows that her company had made.
Yeah.
And she's like looking through it, and it has like the girl's name written in it and everything like that. And then she realizes that the girl's in the room, but sick. Isn't that interesting?
That's really interesting. Wait, how do you not catch the flu? It's just like COVID. Like you either get it or you don't. That's scary. That's almost scarier than the apocalypse where you have to get like bit by something.
Yeah,
You know, like if it's
because
just like,
it's like
airborne.
chance, it feels
Yeah.
like.
Yeah. Isn't it also interesting? I get that there was other airborne pandemics before COVID, but isn't it interesting that you have this book? And then also I always think of Carmen Maria Machado's short story,
Yeah.
and how it's like a respiratory airborne illness that like it's just reading that story after COVID is haunting. So I can only imagine reading Severance would also be a little eerie.
Yeah, I'll never shut up about that book.
About my
Or about
body and
any other parties.
yeah. Love it.
Never.
Never, never, never. It's so good. It's so good. It's perfect. I fear.
I should probably reread it. Also, I've never read In the Dream House. I really just have to do that.
Yeah. I'm excited to read that weird little short story that came free on Kindle. Carmen Maria Machado wrote one. It was all authors of color, I think. She's really cool. Oh, fun. Anything else about your book that you'd like to share with the class?
No. Well, yeah, actually, there is like this weird almost like hatred of New York in the book.
Interesting.
And like obviously capitalism and all that. And I also think it's interesting that besides her in being in a publishing company, her like hobby was photography. And she used to run a blog called like New York City Ghost. So I don't know. And like to her, she was like, it's cool because like I'm the ghost. She kept saying that. And then when I was thinking about like all the, like after the apocalypse happens, all the people there, I'm like, did she suddenly, like, did the othering happen? You know what I mean? Like, she was like, oh, I'm New York City Ghost, but now I see all these people who are ghosts walking around trying to do their everyday things, but they're sick. You know what I mean? So that was fun. But we'll see. Who knows? We don't know what'll happen.
We don't know what'll happen. Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool concept. Kind of spooky. And I kind of like that
You liked it.
a bit. Mine was also one of those things where, like, at first I was like, I'm still enjoying it, but I was like thinking it was going to be one of those books where it's like just very like, nothing really happens, but you're like still entertained. But then the book got crazier and crazier with every page turn in the best way, and I was so excited. And like I'm like 75% of the way through, like three chapters from the end, and I still have no clue how the book's gonna end. And I feel like that's always really fun. And it's just like, I guess the reason I wasn't expecting it to be so crazy, I mean, I guess I should have known because, so Nick, my Nick, gave me as a present for going to grad school, Bunny by Mona Awad, and then this book, Disorientation by Elaine Shi Chow, and was like, I love both of these books, and both of them are about people in grad school. And I was like, period. And so I know Bunny is crazy. Like, we've already established that. We have a whole discussion on it. But like, I was like, surely they can't both be completely unhinged grad school narratives, right? Like, they can't just be, it can't be Looney Tunes Central in both of them. But it was, and it was. At first, when I was reading the book, it was almost too realistic because it's about a girl named Ingrid who's writing, she's actually writing her PhD, so she's not in grad school. She's in like the eighth year of her PhD or something fucking crazy like that. But I was like trying to read this book in the middle of finishing my final papers, and then also with the prospect that on this coming Monday, I have to like start really getting into my dissertation and not looking back until it's on my advisor's desk at the end of August. And the way she was describing like research and like the agony of writing a dissertation, I was like, queen, like this might not be good for my mental health this week because this is a little bit too relatable. And it was like good, but it was just like bleak in that way. But then the plot gets absolutely insane and it becomes like, it's almost like a mystery in a lot of ways. But basically, yeah, the main character, Ingrid, she's Taiwanese American studying at this school in Middlebury, Vermont. So it's a very similar setting to Bonnie, too, in like this rural New England high academia kind of snobby setting. And she doesn't really fully feel like she fits in, like, It reminds me a lot of Pratt too, because like some of the other people who like, especially one of the other girls who's writing her dissertation is just like so pretentious and like so like you know Marissa, the whole other squad. Like there was more than two cliques, but there was two cliques at Pratt. And one of them was a fucking lot, and the other were kind of a group of jokesters, and you can guess which group we were in. We were not we w let's just say we weren't taking things as seriously as the other group. And so like the other girl's like already been like published and peer reviewed, and like she's very like kind of snooty and like I don't know. It was comical to me. But anyway, Ingrid has kind of been like suckered into writing her entire PhD about this Chinese American poet that she like doesn't even really like. And you're at first trying to like figure out like how she even got herself into this situation. And she like doesn't like she hasn't written barely any of her dissertation, and it's like her funding is about to run out in like a few months or at like the end of this year. So like she needs to like really get her shit going. And then at some point, someone leaves like a really cryptic note for her in the archive boxes of the like poetry she's looking through. And it leads into this whole investigation that I won't spoil because the plot twist is insane. But it turns out that like Chow, who's the poet, is not the figure that she really thought he was. Oh, and I guess to add context to it, he was also like a professor at her university, and he's since passed away. And she's one of two students doing a dissertation on him. It's her and then the pretentious girl, who's also Asian, Vivian. But the other, and then her best friend, Eunice, is also getting her degree, but in something completely different. And she's Korean American. And so it's interesting too, because like it does talk a lot about like the Taiwanese American experience, but also like the Asian American experience as a whole. But like the interesting that like the, there's a really interesting conversation being had about like whiteness in relation to that. And so her thesis advisor, who is like the head of the entire East Asian Studies department, is white. And then her boyfriend, Stephen, who's like a trans, he translates Japanese fiction, is white. And then there's like a weird undertone because it's Vermont and like rural Vermont. There's like definitely undertones of like white supremacy happening as well. And you just kind of get to see Ingrid's whole worldview change over the course of like the however many 300 or so pages of the book. And it's split up into like terms. So it's like fall term, winter term, spring term, summer term, which also kind of reminded me of Bunny. I guess that's the perfect way to structure a school narrative as well. And that's also how I still think of years as beginning in August and ending in August, not beginning in January and ending in December. Like, you know what I mean? Like my brain still very much like thinks that way. But yeah, over basically a whole school year, you just see her like completely change the way she views herself and views the world. And also, homegirl is having a mental health crisis. Like, and I love that for her. But like, she is like, you know how we love books about unhinged girlies? Like, this is a book about an unhinged girly, if nothing else. And like, everything she does and thinks and says is very justified. You're like, yeah, I'm with you. But she's also like, she's not doing well. And she kind of like ends up becoming just distrustful of like a lot of the people in her lives, but like for very good reason. Like her boyfriend, her fiance is this white guy, and he's translated this work of fiction by like a tw and they're in their 30s, and he's translated this novel by a 22-year-old Japanese girl who's like super pretty, and they're like going on a tour of a book tour together, and like you start to just get a weird vibe from him because he also can't speak Japanese. And so you're like, why the fuck are you a translator? And like at one point, she finds this review of the book that he translated that's talking about how he like took liberties translating the book, and like the story in Japanese versus in English is very different. And he sort of like sexualized the Japanese girl way more than she obviously would have sexualized herself when she wrote it in Japanese versus when he translates it. So like again, also men are the villain of the book, like the classic, like we love to see it. Like it's kind of has like an almost N not really, but I don't know why it's kind of reminding me of Legally Blonde. And I don't know if that's because both of the like pretentious girls are named Vivian. But like how like you know how like Elle and Vivian end up like working together to like do the work that like is supposed to be like a man's work, or like to like get justice for like something that like a man has done. Like Ingrid and Vivian kind of end up falling into like a similar position with like Eunice as like a sidekick figure in that sense, that I think is really fun. Like I don't know if she would have been inspired by Legally Blonde, but it's kind of actually interesting to think about, and I'm kind of curious about it. But it's like a really cool, really funny, really clever, strange book, and I'm like really glad that I read it. I would be curious to see if she writes anything else or has written anything else, because this book is fairly new. Because this is one of those people that I'd read anything she wrote. Like Ingrid is a really likable character, even though she's unhinged, and even though she definitely has character flaws. That she w would like, you know, own up to herself too. But it's just fun. Like, it's a fun book. I feel like we love literary fiction. Like, this is not to slag on literary fiction, but I feel like oftentimes, like, literary fiction, it isn't as fun sometimes, at least in a plot point, as like horror or crime or fantasy, like young adult. Like I feel like we always end up coming back to that point, being like, I had so much fun reading that this book, and it's because the plot was so entertaining, and like that's not something that adult fiction really gets to do much anymore. I feel like Chow sort of like figured out, she was like, well, you don't have to have a boring plot just to be a sophisticated book, you know what I mean? She figured out how to, and I feel like depending on what happens at the climax of your book, like it's the same thing there. Like she was like, well, I'm gonna write literary fiction, I'm gonna write serious fiction, but I'm gonna set it in the apocalypse because why the fuck not? Like this, like Chow was like, I'm gonna make the most ludicrous, crazy, like plot point mystery you've ever seen, but it's going to be literary fiction and you're going to love it. Like I like to see people doing that, because I feel like we've sort of fallen into a trap of being like, for something to be high brow, it has to not be like fun, or it has to not be like interesting plot. It's like everybody's so focused, I feel like, a lot of the times on the writing and the character, and those things are very important. But it's also like, bitch, I still want to read an entertaining plot. Like, I'm not, you know, like even like you were talking about My Year of Rest and Relaxation, like I have not read it. But it, I feel like nothing much happens in that book. You know what I'm saying?
And I just feel like some of the things that are said in that book is like unhinged for shock factor.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So that's just an interesting phenomenon to think about. But yeah, I've thoroughly enjoyed this book. I'm glad that I read it.
So it's
Everybody
like a
picked.
literary fiction mystery.
Yeah.
Delicious.
But no crimes.
Yet.
A mystery with no crime, if you
No
can.
crime yet.
No crime. I know there's three chapters yet.
You don't know. You don't know what'll happen.
I don't know. And yours was a literary fiction apocalypse, but no horror yet. We don't know.
Only quiet horror so far.
And I like quiet horror, melancholy horror.
Delicious.
We eat melancholy horror for breakfast. We love it. We love it. So what are we doing next week? We already kind of said it.
YA, old time favorites that we missed out on.
I'm so excited for you to read Divergent because I think you like Maze, love Maze Runner more than I love Divergent. But at the same time, I was hyper fixated on Divergent for a long periodically time in that I had the odd. So I had read the book, read the entire series in quick succession. And then I got the audiobook. Oh, and there's actually a third, there's a fourth mini book called Four. So I read all four books. But I had the audiobook and I would listen to it as I was going to sleep. And I shit you not, because of that, I've probably read slash listened to the book Divergent cover to cover like 10 times.
That's insane.
It was that and The Fault in Our Stars, and I would just alternate between the two. So I've like read slash listened to The Fault in Our Stars like probably closer to like times. Like I know that I used to have it like memorized. So I know Divergent like the back of my damn hand. So I'm excited to hear your thoughts on it and to hear if it holds up because I wonder if it doesn't.
I feel like there's something in these specifically YA dystopian books where they have to have a little bit, just a dribble, just a little tiny smidgen of like sexual angst.
Yeah,
So
100%.
I'm really hoping that this one has a lot of that.
It does. And you've not seen the movie either, right?
Fun fact, I actually went to see the first movie only because they were showing a commercial for the next Maze Runner book. So I made my dad take me to see it so that I could see the commercial.
That's so funny. That's actually cute. Because I was gonna say, just try not to picture Shailene Woodley and Theo James. Like, try to make up your own versions of Triss and Four, because it's way more fun if you do that.
Good. I will. I'm good at
And
that.
should I do the same, or should I picture Dylan O'Brien?
I think that they casted that movie really great.
Oh, good. Okay.
So,
Newt Thomas Brody Sangster, if you will.
I love him.
I think the girl from Skins is in it.
Yeah.
And then your bitch from Black Mirror. Whoever plays Gally.
Oh, yeah. Will something.
Coulter.
Holder, yes.
Oh, I'm excited. And you love this book, right? Like, you love it.
I love the series. It's so
You like
good.
it better than Hunger Games?
That's hard.
I feel like
Hunger
you do.
Games, I think, stands the test of time because
Okay.
what it's saying is so culturally, socially involved.
Yeah.
Whereas, like the Maze Runner, I don't, it's not like that, you know?
Okay.
It doesn't have like a bigger message in the way that the Hunger Games does. You can't,
Okay.
you know.
And you really liked the fifth wave a lot too, didn't
I loved the Fifth Wave. I
you?
think that I want that man to write more and to write adult books.
Where'd he go? What's he up to?
Couldn't tell you.
And then correct me if I'm wrong. Did you also read The Darkest Minds or no?
I didn't read The Darkest Minds. I read the Gone series, which is on the bottom there. And I read the guy who wrote Scythe,
Yeah.
Neil Shusterman, he has a
Yeah.
series called Unwind.
I remember that. Yes, of course,
Yeah,
of course.
that one. This is like so good. They're all
And that
so
one,
good.
it's nearly middle grade too. I feel like it's a slightly younger than Hunger Games, but it's very spooky. You know what I mean? Like maybe it's because the kids are slightly younger in that one. They're like what, like 14 maybe? I
I
don't
feel
know.
like I'd say the Gone series is more middle grade,
Oh,
even
okay.
though the last book, two characters do have sex, but they don't talk, they don't say it.
How
They don't
do you
say
know?
because you know.
Well, okay, here's not that it fucking matters, but when I was doing my research for my paper on Hunger Games, I came up twice that like Katniss remains like, quote, I hate this word, but like virginal throughout, and I was like, that's not fucking true. I context clues thought she and PETA slept together in the second book.
At which point? Let me reread it.
Reread it. They're on the train.
Yeah, when
And
they like are, when he keeps going to her room or whatever.
yeah.
I
Maybe
think,
that's
yeah.
just right.
Yeah.
They're 17 years old. Like, I don't think.
And they're seeking comfort in each other.
Right. Like, I don't think that they were just snoozing. Like, that's not. Anyway, I just thought that was weird. I thought that was a weird thing to put on Katniss. It was like using that as if it was like one of her like good qualities almost, and I was like,
Right.
can this bitch live? Like, she's
To go
been
to
through
some
enough.
dick.
Exactly. Like, let her cook. Like, she can do whatever she wants. It's none of my business. It's none. And that makes it so much better, honestly, the fact that they end up getting married and having a kid, because like I would have preferred that they have like a relationship before that happens, like any kind, you know what I mean? Like, any adults are weird. Some of the takes about Hunger Games from boomers were fucked up, dude. I was like, you actually missed the entire point. But yeah, you'll love, I think you'll like Divergent. I think you'll think it's a little silly, but I
That's
think you'll
okay.
like it's okay.
That's okay. We like the silly.
So we'll see you then.
Bye.